Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, March 2nd.
Yes, it is.
Yes, Kelsey. Hi, good morning.
Day after Super Tuesday.
Indeed, huh? Did you watch the results at night last night?
Oh, my gosh. I'm so guilty. I didn't. I was working, though, so yeah. I had a good excuse.
But. Yeah, but you know the results probably pretty much, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like anticipated, Donald Trump is leading.
Oh, yeah.
Hillary's leading. So that's pretty much it. People are going to have to just face the fact that Donald Trump is going to run for president.
Can you believe it? I mean, it's just bizarre.
I know. But I think that helps Hillary. I think really that.
Well, of course it does.
Yeah, right?
But you know what? We should not be so sure.
Yeah,
because
right?
Stranger things have happened,
that's
obviously.
True. That's like, true. I mean, he's gotten this far, right?
I never thought that his end goal was actually to run for
to
president.
Do it, right? Yeah.
I thought he was just planning to kind of, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Promote his reality show or whatever.
Yeah. That's true. So, but I still don't get it. I don't get it. We have, I guess, in the studio, we'll get to him in just a couple minutes, a very interesting book that he wrote, and something we don't talk about every day, Kelsey, right?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So that'll be cool for those of you who like action and the intrigue and stuff like that. So
I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yesterday, we had a very cool guest. We had Ellie Torres in the studio.
She was great.
She was great. I'm in love with her. I'm telling you. I'm literally in love with her.
Oh, you're so cute.
Because we were talking after the show, too, and everything, and she's just so nice.
She is, right?
Right. You know, beautiful, sweet. Talented,
yeah.
You know, nice, friendly. What else can you ask for in a woman?
I know.
There you go. So, but she's got a boyfriend on the other side of the country. It's like, come on with these long distance relationships. They don't work, man. You know, and they suck.
I know.
Too.
Just wait it out.
Yeah.
She'll come around.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I should try and seduce her or something, you know.
Yeah.
But I just don't do that when people are attached, you know. I don't know why, but I gotta start maybe, you know. Other guys are doing it. What the hell, you know?
Oh, yeah. It happens all the
People
time.
People do it all the time. Actually, women do it, too. You know,
yeah.
Oh, this guy's married. I don't care. I like him a lot.
Oh, gosh. I don't know about that. But
women
do
that.
Oh, yeah. People
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I can't count how many guys I've been like, you know, I've had come up and be like, well, you know, why don't you just break up with him?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Are you going to marry him?
Like, yeah.
I don't think you're going to marry him. So,
whoa, guys are desperate, I'm telling you.
I'm
but
like,
what do you expect? You post all these pictures on Instagram and stuff, and people get hungry, you know?
Yeah, I know. I'm looking a mess today. I didn't even have time to put makeup on. I was just like running out the door.
Yeah.
I got upset at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, how much longer are you going to have to shoot at night like this?
I have another shoot the 3rd, so that's tomorrow. So it's tomorrow night.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what my call time is, though. I haven't gotten the call sheet for that one yet.
Yeah. Well, I can see in your eyes you'd love to sleep right now. But
oh, my God, I know.
I do thank you for showing up.
Oh, yeah, of course. I wouldn't miss it.
That's cool. So, good. Well, you know, you'll have time to rest when you die, right?
Exactly.
That's
kind of how I feel. I'm just, you know, I think it's that actress mentality where you're just like so scared you're never going to have any money and you're never going to work that when you do work, it's just like,
you're just like,
yeah, you're so excited and you just can't wait to go no matter how like deliriously tired you are.
Yeah. I know. So, yeah, I mean, so, yeah, some hearts get broken sometimes. What can you do?
Well, I know. It's life, I guess.
Yeah, she's
great.
Yeah.
She's really sweet. Yeah, I followed her on Instagram, and, yeah, she's all out and about all the time.
You see, I need to get my game up because, I mean, there's people that, like, you know, Larry King, you know, the interviewer and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always, like, like hit on his guests and stuff like that. You know, I mean, yeah, actually his current wife, I think, was a guest on his show.
You're kidding.
No, he's been married like 7-12 times. I don't know how many times he's been married. And, you know, so he does that. Maybe I should hit on my guests.
Anyway. I don't know. I think it cheapens it personally.
It does, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
But what does he care? You know, he's got the woman he wants. So there you go, you know.
I guess. But I don't know. Especially not like on the show.
Right. No,
maybe
not
like
on the show.
After.
No, not on the show. Nobody does it on the show.
I don't know.
You gotta have a little class, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I respect people's relationships and all that. I'm just wondering when I'm going to find someone.
You will.
But yeah,
will.
But I'm not desperate, you know?
It's no. Just that
you want some companionship and stuff, you
of
know?
Of course.
It's not like I need to get married or anything.
Right.
But you need to find the right people, you know, so we'll see.
Yeah, whatever. You have to. And it's worth the wait, I think, when you do find the right person.
Right, right, yeah. But I need to be out there more. You know, that's the thing.
Know. Yes.
Yeah. That helps, you know, when you're out there all the time.
It does. Yeah. I mean, your odds go up a lot when you put in an application, you know?
Yeah, I know. And it's funny, I'm seeing pictures of, what was the name that was on our show, the social media girl?
Victoria.
Victoria, right.
Yeah.
Victoria Fratz. And she's like everywhere now. I mean, now that I follow her too, right? She's like, she does get like a lot of likes and stuff, you know? I mean, she just puts up a picture. It's like 1,700 likes. Like, my God, you know? And nobody really knows her except, you know, the people that follow her.
Right.
And she started from scratch on social media, you know?
Right.
So that's pretty cool. And then I see her with another... Remember Ali Levine that we had here? Were you here when we had her?
I don't think so.
She's a publicist, stylist for the stars and stuff. Well, anyway, they were both in the same picture, and they'd both been guests on the show.
Oh, how fun!
I know, so I always see that. It's pretty cool, because this town is pretty small when it comes to entertainment.
Oh, my gosh, isn't it?
Right?
Like, it's remarkably small.
Yeah.
I'm always running into people, too.
Right?
Yeah.
I know.
It, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wish it wasn't so small, but then other times it's really nice because you're like, oh, I know that person and they're working this job, so I'm going to work that. And you know.
Right, right.
So that is nice.
As large as this town is, but entertainment is pretty pretty small, actually, when you think about it. Before we get to our guest, I wanted to bring this up. This sounds cool. An L.A. skyscraper, you know, the biggest building in the West is the U.S. Bank building downtown. I don't know if you've ever seen it. You probably have.
I have,
it's the tallest building.
I remember the talk about all of this.
Right. So, about the glass slide they're putting on there?
No. Actually,
okay.
I heard about that.
Oh, no. You heard about another building that's going to be higher than that
one.
Okay,
yeah, because I remember the whole thing about the highest building in the West.
Exactly. So now they're going to put a glass slide at the 70th floor that you can actually slide to the 69th floor.
Wait,
it's
just
all
one
glass.
Floor, though?
Yeah.
Just one floor?
It's one, yeah, but it's glass. I mean, you're like 70 floors above ground.
But, I mean, if it breaks, you're still going to just fall on the 69th floor.
No, you're not. This is like suspended.
Oh.
I mean, you can see there's like an artist rendering of it.
Uh-huh.
And it's like outside. Like, imagine in our building if there was a slide here now made of glass. Yeah.
Oh, no, thank you.
Have you seen those pictures? Like on Facebook, sometimes they show those glass bridges.
Yeah.
Like they have that that place in Grand Canyon where like it's all floor glass floor and stuff. And it's so scary to stand on this.
Oh,
you know?
I am not about
and
that.
And it's funny. And everybody's like crawling on their hands and knees. But when you think about it, you don't have to, you know.
Right.
So it's funny as hell. But yeah, I don't. And there's like a huge one in China. And I'm like, there's no way I can cross that bridge.
You wouldn't cross
that bridge. No, I'm not taking the slide either.
I don't think I will. You know, I'm not scared of very many things, but heights is one of the things that I'm not. And, you know, it's I was reading, actually, that it's one of the inherent fears that you're born with, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like people who aren't afraid of heights are crazy.
Yeah, right?
I mean, it's like a natural fear, you know?
Yeah. Well, to you it is. And to me, it's become like that. I didn't used to be like that. I would love roller coasters and
high
buildings.
Well, but I mean, within reason. Within reason, though. Like, right. I'm not scared of flying.
Right.
I'm not scared of, like, being, you know, living on the 16th floor, because I do, you know?
Right.
But... I mean, like getting really close to the edge of a cliff or, right. you know, something that is like reasonably scary.
Right. But that's amazing. You are on the 16th floor if you are afraid of heights, right? Because it still looks high, right?
Oh, yeah. The view is so pretty, though.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Can't beat
okay,
it.
Okay. So for those of you who want to see LA from, what is it, 1,000 feet above ground, you can do that. And pretty soon. Some people love this stuff, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I have friends who do. They're like going to be the first person on that slide. But not me.
Not you, right?
No, not me.
All right. Well, let's get to our guest now who's sitting here patiently, and we appreciate that. Go ahead and get close to the mic. We have Mr. Taylor Bayouth in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for sitting through all the bullshit we talk about.
I know. Our rambling.
I know. But we have to start the show somehow, you know. So,
oh, gosh, gotcha, makes sense. Sounds great.
Thank you for joining us. I know you're a little sick and everything, but that's fine. You know, we'll get sick, too. It's okay. I don't get sick that much. You know that? I mean, because considering all the number of people I see every day, mm-hmm. I should be sick all the time, like kids exposed
right.
to stuff in their, you know, kindergarten.
Yeah, we've got whatever. A one-year-old now, so it's just a fact of life.
Really?
Oh,
so,
you have a one-year-old. Yeah. Oh, congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what happens, right? You it get does. Sick all the yeah. time.
My
yeah.
niece just turned one.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Same story over there?
On the 25th.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gets sick. Yeah, she
yeah.
does.
But wait till they start going to, you know.
School.
To the daycare and stuff. Yeah, like they, with all the other kids that are sick and everything, they bring everything home with them. You know, so that's what you have to look forward to.
We haven't got to that yet.
Not yet, right? So this is your first one?
It is, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Congratulations
Thank
to you.
Thank you so much.
Are you originally from L.A.?
I am. Yeah,
oh,
born
really?
And raised.
Really? Not many people are, right?
I know. We were talking about that the other day, I think. Yeah. It's one of those rare things when someone's actually from L.A. We're all transplants.
That's true. So you've seen the town transform quite a bit from when you were a kid to now.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the Valley. So
yeah.
And there's a bit of a difference between, you know, San Fernando Valley and you know, downtown.
And L.A., yeah, right, LA, and yeah. stuff. But the entire city has changed quite a bit. You know, I mean, it's gotten
oh, yeah.
a lot more congested and everything, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Have you considered living anywhere else? Or
I mean,
like
I have. I've moved around a little bit.
You have?
Yeah, when I got out of high school, I moved to Seattle. I've lived in San Francisco for a little bit.
Yeah.
I did a short stint in Colorado. So I've moved around.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I can
nice.
Safely say I love it here and I'd like to remain here.
Yeah,
there
right?
There you go.
I know. I mean, why not? You know, you're born in paradise pretty much, or at least a lot of people feel it is, because everybody's moving here, right?
Yeah, that's because everyone says that. You have to stop telling people that.
Yeah, right?
I know.
And when I tell people, look, we have 4 million people, but we have room for you too, right? I should start changing that.
Yeah.
You say, we have no more room for people. Please
Let's talk
go
more
back.
About traffic.
Exactly. Move back to where you came from, right?
Yeah.
No, but, if, you know, I mean, essentially, we're all immigrants one way or another, you know, so
yeah.
what are you going to say?
That's true.
So you were born, raised here in the Valley, in San Fernando Valley. So that's pretty cool. Did you have a nice childhood here?
I did, yeah.
Yeah?
I mean,
what high school did you go to?
Well, I went to two. I went to Chatsworth High.
Uh-huh.
And I went to El Camino.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I used to live in Chatsworth, and El Camino was where my kids went.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, and my nephews are going there now. So it's a pretty cool school. El Camino is a nicer area of the valley, you know.
Oh, great.
And that and Chatsworth, or Granada Hills High is pretty good too, right?
Yeah, I knew a lot of people over there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was what, in the 90s? Or?
Yeah, 98.
Yeah, 98, because you seem pretty young to me, you know. And I can't compare it to when I went to high school here because it was a totally different...
Where'd you go to high school?
Actually, I finished high school in Vegas, and I moved here when I was 20. So you wouldn't know the high school in Vegas. I was living there at the time. But so I didn't go to high school here, but I did go to Cal State Northridge for college. Did you go to college at all?
I did not.
Oh, you did not?
No, I just skipped
cool.
that.
Yeah.
Out.
And there he
there
is.
There you go.
Yeah, and there he is, a writer, and we're going to get to his book in just a moment. And you see, so you're here to say you don't have to go to college to be able to write.
Oh, no. I don't want to represent that.
You're like, go to school, kids. But...
Wow. So now you wrote a book. Now, have you always been into writing?
I have. I mean, in various forms. I've written more screenplays than I have books.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, this is really the only book I've written.
So, oh, wow. First.
And at what point in your life did you start writing screenplays? How old were you, would you say?
I've written three. The first I wrote when I was 23.
Oh, okay, nice. So you developed, a liking for it, for scripts? Have you had one or two in your head for a couple of years? Or?
Oh, more than that, yeah.
Really?
I mean, growing up here, you just naturally learn how to write screenplays. So.
Really?
Yeah, read a lot of Sid Field and just kind of applied that to three different stories, very different screenplays, and I'm sure I'll write more, but they've all been on spec, so nothing you've seen in the theater, at least yet.
And is that what you wanted to do?
No.
Ultimately, is write screenplays, or no?
Not really. I do a variety of things. I mean, my day job is in technology. So.
Oh, wow. Yeah, do you do?
Well, I work for internet startups. I help them build their product teams and
get
products off the ground.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's pretty cool. You see, and he didn't have to go to college for that either. So how did you get the training to do that? I mean, the skills.
I think it's really difficult for people to, go to school for the type of technology that I'm involved in because it's just evolving so quickly. I mean, the classes you take, are going to be almost irrelevant.
Right, by the time you learn.
Exactly.
By the time you're out of school, right?
It's such an evolving industry.
Yeah, so it's a self-taught type of thing, right?
In my case, it is. And I know there are people out there that took computer science courses and IT courses and are doing very well. It just wasn't the path that I took.
Yeah. Well, that's fine, but obviously you have the intelligence to be able to create things from scratch, and that's what's important. When you do have talent, in my opinion, if you have a lot of talent, you don't have the pressure of going to school, because you have something to offer already, something you're very good at.
Must be nice.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like...
Well, but you're talented. You
I'm like,
have to
let's
go
get
to school,
five
right?
doctorates.
Yeah. but for what you're doing, you didn't need college education, right?
No.
So you got it because you wanted to, You wanted to stimulate yourself.
I was forced, gunpoint.
Oh, you were forced. Okay.
No. I definitely enjoyed my college experience.
Yeah, I know. You told us about that. I don't know what part of it was the study.
I know.
Enjoyed,
it was
right?
beneficial in a plethora of ways.
So remind everyone, what did you major in?
Broadcast journalism.
Oh, okay.
So I'm using it now. Look at that.
There you go. You see, there you go. You are. Okay, cool. So, yeah, everybody, go to college. No, but I think college is important. But right now I have kids in college age, and I tell them, I said, look, school is important. Okay, I understand that it's a general agreement that school is good, but first you got to support yourself. You've got to get a job, and school comes second, I think. And especially in today's world, many people go to school, they get out of school, they realize I can't find a job in this profession, So, can you elaborate a little bit on what it is that you do on your day job? I mean, you said you help startups and everything. What do you do exactly?
Sure. I mean, it's a little confusing to some people to use the word product in regards to technology because people think of products as things that exist on shelves.
Right.
Tangible
Physical,
goods,
tangible.
Things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My role is a product role on the software side. So when I come into a startup like... it can be any startup, and I just choose startups normally, but any company that has a website that offers services or products online thinks of their product in terms of many products that are kind of grouped into one kind of overarching picture.
Right.
So, for instance, Facebook, they look at their friend feed as a product, and they look at their new like button as a product, and they look at, ad... their ad center kind of ad product as a separate product. So everything is kind of looked at as a business within a business, basically. And I help kind of define what those businesses are and what technologies you need to put in place to be able to measure success of those businesses.
Wow. I'm very impressed. So how did you learn all this stuff? I mean, did you get into a situation where you had to learn it, or did you consciously say, I'm going to learn this and then go and help businesses?
I think just like anything, it's an incremental thing.
Uh-huh.
So started out, you know, just basically building small websites for individuals. And then, you know, as you do that, you learn more. So you start, you know, building out, you know, markup and front end languages, and then you start learning the back end languages.
Oh, so cool.
And then you start learning server architecture, and then you start learning UI, UX, and you know, design patterns. And it just kind of builds and builds and builds until you've amassed some, you know,
some
knowledge and experience.
So you've built it yourself, though. I mean, you know, that's the thing. You can take full credit for that, you know, for having been able to really move up and learn all these things, you know, as you do them. And that comes with experience, you know. And yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much self-taught in computer animation when I opened my company.
That's neat too.
Yeah, 25 years ago I did computer animation. I taught myself that, computer graphics, things like that. And then I created careers for myself, you know. So I shouldn't be so surprised that he managed to do that.
I was going to say, I mean, you know, we're sitting here in the studio, and there's a lot of, you know, nuance here that I don't know anything about. That I'm really second nature to you. You know, you just know it.
That's true. So, okay, so you do that, and so then you decided, I'm going to write a book, right? Did you have this book in your head for a while?
I did, yeah. I had an idea for a kind of how-to guide for ripping off priceless art and artifacts. And at one point, my wife said, well, you should just write that. I was actually considering hiring someone to write it for me because I had never written a book before.
Right.
But yeah, this just started out with a concept. And kind of
and how did you amass the knowledge to write a book like that? That's what I'm curious about, because it doesn't – I guess it kind of pertains to your day job and your background. Right? Or not really?
There's aspects of technology in here, hacking into systems and security cameras.
Okay,
like,
but what about the rest of it? I mean, where did that plethora of knowledge come from?
Yeah, I mean, for me, that was the easy part, because the part that I was really scared of was the actual writing process, the kind of literati of it. Mm. The easy part for me was just, you know, the due diligence. So what I did basically is I did a lot of research on each of the museums that I wanted to hit. And then I went out and talked to as many people as possible. So I talked to, you know, electricians, I talked to computer experts, I talked to security systems experts, I talked to helicopter pilots. I mean, probably 100 different people, you know, in-depth conversations about various things, and helped me kind of piece together how the heist would actually work.
Great. And this is an introduction to the book. The book is titled How to Steal the Mona Lisa and Six Other World-Famous Treasures. Fascinating stuff. Has the Mona Lisa been stolen before?
It's been stolen once before in the early 1900s, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. When was the painting made? Do you know?
I forget when the painting was made. I mean, I'm not an art historian or a heist historian, but I think it's somewhere in the 1500s.
I see. Okay. Yeah, it was like the Renaissance and stuff, and Leonardo da Vinci and all the gang, you know, in Florence. For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Taylor Bayouth. The book is How to Steal the Mona Lisa. And as you heard, this is about heists, about technology, about being smart and tricky, and a lot of things. And so you're saying you had this idea of, like, you know, how do you get that kind of idea? I mean, did it just dawn on you one day to think, what would it take to steal something like that?
Well, I was actually visiting the Louvre.
In Paris.
Wow.
Yeah. I was with a friend, and we were young. This was in 2008, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we were just by ourselves. So, you know, of course we were enjoying the artwork and everything else. But I think one of the things that really struck me the most when I visited the Mona Lisa for the first time was how small it is.
Yes.
It is tiny.
Yeah, it's very small.
Right.
And the other thing that really struck me is that it's very close to an exit. It's only about 50 yards from an exit. Wow. And so I had kind of a good time looking around and kind of saying to myself, there's not a lot of cameras around here. There's one security guard kind of, you know, wandering around. He looks very tired. And I don't see anyone else. And I can almost see the exit from the gallery that the Mona Lisa's in. So that was when I kind of had the idea, oh, this would be fun to put together a heist.
You see, there you go. So you have the mind of a storyteller.
Or a thief.
Or a thief.
right? Yeah. Arguably, either
one. No, but that's the thing, you know? I mean, it's like, you know, normal people probably not think of this thing, you know?
Right.
But there you are. Your mind started working and you're going, you know, what's going on here? This is cool. So, I mean, have you read some books that had to do with the Mona Lisa, like even like novels, you know, like the Da Vinci Code and stuff, to learn more about the Louvre itself and about the painting?
Or, oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. I've read that book. I mean, most of my research was done online because what I really needed was I needed layouts of the museums. I needed blueprints if I can get a hold of them. I needed to know details such as where the cameras were placed, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So you can't find that kind of stuff in fiction.
Right. That's true.
So most of the research I did was calling people at the museums and asking them questions until they said, who are you?
Yeah, right?
Maybe I shouldn't have answered the last three.
I know. They're like, why are you asking where the security cameras are? I mean, that's an alarming question, isn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing how much people just start spitting out until they realize, really? What am I saying? Like, why am I giving out this information?
Yes,
that's hilarious.
You see, you revealed some things about human nature. Very cool. So, so that's the Mona Lisa. What are some of the other treasures that you cover in the book?
I do seven in total. I do the Archaeopteryx lithographica, which is one of my favorites. It's the first linking fossil that was found after Charles Darwin wrote The Origin of Species.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah, I believe it was found only 3 years after, so it was like a very quick kind of vindication for Charles Darwin.
Yeah.
Now they found about 13 others, so it's not that uncommon or rare, but it's still, you know, basically priceless.
Right.
And it's small enough to basically put under your arm and walk out with.
Wow.
I do the Hope Diamond, which is an obvious one.
Yeah.
At the Smithsonian. I do King Tut's Golden Death Mask with the cobras. I don't know if that's image kind of.
And is that in Egypt?
Yeah, it's in Cairo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's it's in Egypt, right? Actually, you can see the pyramids from the museum.
Really?
The Museum of Egyptian Antiquities.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh, I gotta go there.
Have you been there?
I have not, actually.
Oh.
I've not been to most of these museums. Uh-huh. So most of the research I've done has been remote.
Okay.
I do the Codex Lester, which is another Leonardo da Vinci notebook, one of his notebooks with the his famous mirror writing. I don't know if you have ever seen any of those.
Right.
And then I do Queen Elizabeth II's crown, which is part of the Queen's regalia, the crown jewels.
Oh, okay, sure. London. I saw those.
Yeah. Where are those located?
Those are located in the London Towers.
Yeah, London Tower.
The towers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Wow, that's a lot of stuff to go see.
Oh, know? And of course, Rodin's Thinker. 2,000-pound statue. At the,
yes.
Yeah.
So a 2,000-pound statue.
I saw the
Thinker
too.
You did? Okay.
I did.
Well, there's several of them. Did you see the one in Paris or in?
In London.
In London. Okay. Yeah. Well, you saw another one. So he actually commissioned about, I think, 18.
Oh,
versions
wow.
of the
okay.
Thinker. And the reason why they're all considered Rodin's Thinker is because he commissioned them and apparently oversaw them. But he did the initial sculpt, but did none of the casts, which is really interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
But they're all priceless.
Yeah.
All 18, I believe.
Wow. You know what I'm thinking here is, I mean, if you thought about each one and how to steal them, you've got yourself seven separate movies here. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
totally.
You like scripts and everything, and I mean, I love heist movies, you know.
I actually do too.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you're talking about a 2,000-pound statue, but the thing is that we've seen movies where they steal bigger things, right?
Oh, yeah.
And The Italian Job is one of my favorite films.
Oh, yeah. I love that one.
And in the beginning, they took that big safe, right? Downstairs, down through the building.
Through the floor.
Yeah, through the floor. And, and usually the Robert De Niro has good heist films, too.
I love all the Oceans movies.
The Ocean?
Yeah,
oh, the first one
great.
Was
The first
awesome,
one was the best,
right?
I
Wasn't
thought.
It, though? Yeah. It was so clever, man. And you just, like, at the end, you just go, oh, my God. You know, just a big smile on your face.
Oh, I love heist
walk
movies.
Out, right?
It's great. So one thing I wanted to try to avoid, though, is a lot of these heist movies, you know, they there's a lot of theater. I mean, it's Hollywood, right?
So right.
There's a lot of, you know, crisscrossing laser nets that people are kind of trying to, you know, traverse and really elaborate security systems that are just unrealistic. So
yeah, right?
I talk a lot about that in the book.
Right. Yeah. You know, I can see how you can be like – also a consultant to films that are being shot about heists and things like that.
We
right?
actually just optioned this book, and I can't talk about who it is yet.
Oh, that's exciting.
So, that's very exciting.
We're hoping it's going to become a movie at some point.
Yeah, yeah, good for you. Have you written like the script for any of this?
You know, amazingly, we optioned it, and I said, well, this is great. I'm a screenwriter. I've written 3 screenplays. I'll be able to at least throw
they
my hat
to
in.
Do
they're
so.
Like, no way. You know,
no.
That's just not how it works. The way it works is that you have these production companies. They've got their writers. They've
sure.
got their team.
Exactly,
they've got
right?
the package. So they just want you out, you know.
Yeah, they just want the ideas and the stories and all that. Yeah. Wow. So that becomes an adaptation, right? Is that what they would call it?
They're not going to call it an adaptation because there's no characters in this. This isn't a fiction. It's a nonfiction.
Right. Okay.
They're using this for the mechanics of the heists.
I see.
I see.
Now, so tell us some of the technology that you talk about here. So you learned all of this stuff mostly online, right? You had to do a lot of research, obviously.
Yeah.
So you sat there. So I'm trying to picture how you went through the process. So you're sitting there. You have a layout of the museum or something. You know the pieces. What do you do? You sit there and do you start thinking, how am I going to get this thing out of here?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, there was a lot of ideas that were scrapped because I got, you know, I went too far in one direction and realized, oh, I can't get out the back. You know, there's,
oh, wow.
there's
okay.
you know, people out there at 8 a.m., you know, so... Timing was a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, geography was a big part of it. Understanding, you know, just the security systems obviously was a big part of it. Like, you know, where are their cameras, where they're not, mm-hmm. what cameras can be disabled, that sort of thing.
Right.
Right.
Do you like playing video games and stuff?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm a gamer.
That's the thing. You see, it's like you have a Splinter Cell where you disable the cameras and stuff.
Right.
Things like that. You know, stealth.
You're a man of my
that.
Heart. I love that game.
Yeah, right?
That's awesome.
They need to make a new one, right? I mean, they haven't made one in a long time, Splinter Cell.
Yeah, I think Metal Gear Solid is the new Splinter Cell.
Oh, it is? So there's stealth in it and stuff, too?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, I'm going to have to check it out. I just bought a PlayStation 4 over the holidays.
Ah!
Because I needed to get something, and I absolutely don't need anything. I've got everything, right?
Right.
So I went and bought a PlayStation 4. It just sits there. I don't even use it. And that's very unusual for me. I don't buy things I don't use. But
right.
I just... You know when I used to play? I used to play on computers when they were in computer games. So Splinter Cell, I play with the mouse and the keyboard. And I get so used to it that it's hard for me to control the controllers. And, I mean, I've been trying for... a good week or two, and I'm still like, I'm wasting so much time just aiming, and I'm going, God, this is so frustrating. I think that's why I give up on it, you know?
Probably.
You can't control your shots. I mean, you have to be so precise and stuff in these games, you know?
First world problem.
Yeah, right?
God, this video game is like unruly.
No, but the bottom line is you get to live those things, you know?
It's yeah.
like virtually, but... But still, you know, so when he talks about disabling cameras and stuff, it's like, you know, the technology is there, right? I mean, how would you disable a camera in a museum, let's say?
You know, honestly, silly string is a good way to do that.
You're kidding.
No. I mean, it's you can it works
oh, you
about
shoot
20
it.
Feet away.
Oh, wow. Oh,
yeah.
That's yeah.
Cool, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I want to try it.
Well, I mean, you know, and I said earlier, I talk about... the security or kind of the lack thereof a lot in the book, because I think a lot of people walk into a museum like the Louvre, let's say, and they get the sense that, you know, the security is almost palpable. Like it's, you know, there's these rare works of art that you've only seen in books and television. Like, you know, there must be all the security happening.
Right. You assume.
The scenes.
Sure.
Right. And it's just really not the case. And the reason why is pretty simple. I mean, these museums are basically funded by donors and state and government money. So there's just not when you look at security for a museum, you need to look at it in terms of security per square the budget per square foot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And these museums are, you know, sometimes in some cases, you know, hundreds of thousands of square feet.
Yeah, like the Louvre is huge.
The Louvre is massive, you know. And when you actually look at budgets per square footage, the museums that are in this book are about anywhere between 1/10 and 1/100 of the budget you'd find in your typical Las Vegas casino.
Oh my gosh.
So they're not, you know, they're not operating off of modern technology. They're operating off of technology circa 1990. We're talking about cameras recording on VHS tapes.
You're kidding.
Some of them are taped on the same tape over and over again. So even if they do catch someone on a camera, like it's really hard to identify faces at that point because the tape is so degraded.
Really? So you're serious? I mean, you're saying so it boils down to not having enough money for modern security? Is that what it – I mean,
if you're looking at it from the perspective of the museums, then yes. You know, this is – and of course, they're – you know, I mean, some museums have better budgets than others. So the Louvre does have a pretty good budget. But when you look around, there's still maybe only one camera in every gallery. Right. When you go to a casino, you look up and there's 10 cameras in, you know, a 10-foot square space.
Right.
So let me ask you this. So, I mean, if it's like that, if it's indeed the way you're describing, how come nobody's stealing this stuff all the time? You know what I'm saying?
Like I said, I think it's the I think it's fear.
Really? Well, and it's the obviously there's a market for this stuff, but how would one go about liquidating it without getting caught? Yeah. I mean, you know, cash is a lot better from the Vegas casino.
That's true. Than having the Mona Lisa in your house.
The Mona Lisa. Yeah. Now that's going to give you away.
Yeah, right?
Everybody has cash. Like.
Right.
I'm sure there are a lot. There's like a few different categories of this, I would say. So one is the person that wants to just hang a rare piece of artwork up in their living room. And I think this is probably the smallest slice of the pie, right?
But yeah, of course.
You know there are people out there that,
of
you know.
Of course, yeah.
You know, but and then there's other people that actually are part of the art scene that, you know, understand who these shady art dealers are, that they can actually fence something like the Mona Lisa to. And usually the process is for that, you know, category is pretty simple. You just you sell it to one person, that one sells it to another, that person sells it to someone else, and you obfuscate the, you know, the path until someone basically sells it and they can claim that they have no idea that it was stolen if they ever, you know, were found out.
So it probably goes even through a couple of generations or something.
Exactly. Yeah. But I think the biggest category for, like you said, liquidating a piece of artwork like this, and this is what happens most of the time, is they get sold right back to the museums. I mean, they get sold to the insurance companies.
Oh, yeah.
So the insurance companies have a checkered past of dealing with criminals and basically not telling the police about it, because their goal is to get the piece back.
Right.
And it's why 97% of all art is recovered.
Really?
And then they don't go to jail?
Most of the time they don't. I mean, you hear about times when they do. But
cover your ears, kids.
But usually you can get away with this sort of thing. I mean, you know, look at the Gardner heist in Boston in the early 1900s. I mean, they went into that museum with a roll of duct tape. They walked out with 15 famous paintings. They had a bunch of Rembrandts.
Wow.
And those were, you can still see those.
Yeah.
Not in that museum, but you can still go and see those.
And the guys are sitting happy like, joke's on you.
Yeah, I mean, they did catch a few of those people actually recently, but there's still several that are at large.
Yeah. Wow. For those of you just joining us, if you want to know how to steal the Mona Lisa, you're at the right place. We're talking to Taylor Bayuth, and he wrote the book How to Steal the Mona Lisa. When was the book published? I see on sale in March, so
yesterday.
Now? Yesterday?
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow, so this is like giving birth, right? How long did it take you to write?
It's a long gestation.
It is, right?
Yeah. The book, I mean, from, you know, the first time I sat down to now, 3 years.
3 years. Wow.
But the last year was the editing process and just that.
So. Right, but it still takes a long time. I mean, you have to think long term and be committed to it. Wow. So, well, congratulations to you. I mean, this is like really exciting. And everybody make sure to get the book and also give it good reviews on Amazon. You know, sometimes I think I forget to like give our guests great reviews, because, you know, we bring guests that seem interesting and stuff, you know. And so when you come in, I figure, you know, I want to at least give them a good review because I obviously like the book or what you have to say. But I don't always do it. So I need to find some time and go back and give reviews to all our listeners.
Yeah.
And to ask you... the listeners to also follow the links. Usually we will put a link either to your website or to Amazon or something where you guys can get the book. And Kelsey, let me see the book for a second. Do you have it over there? Oh, okay, cool. It's It's a paperback, smaller format, How to Steal the Mona Lisa and Six Other World-Famous Treasures. This teaches you how to scale buildings.
That's cool.
Kelsey, I want to know how to scale buildings. Reinvent your identity.
Okay, I could use that one.
Yeah. Camouflage a getaway car. Wow. Fence your stolen goods and more. Wow, Taylor, this is like... not only is it interesting and intriguing, but it sounds entertaining too.
Thanks.
Right? Key bumping. What's key bumping? I just opened the page here. This is techniques and tools of the trade.
Yeah, so key bumping is a form of lock picking. When you think of lock picking, you think you have a lock pick set and kind of
like in the movies, with the right?
Lock. Yeah,
yeah.
Most locks don't really require that level, so you can use something called a key bumper, and it's basically a plastic key that's designed to be hit with a mallet on the back end of it once it's in the lock,
right?
And that kind of pressure will pop open the springs,
right?
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
So you
cool.
start with a key bumper. You can get like 70% of locks with that, and then if that doesn't work, you can move to a lock pick set.
I see. Okay, wow. So you have to know a little bit about how locksmiths work and stuff too, right?
Yeah, I mean there's some heists that require you to get into a security room to access a computer, for instance.
Right. Yeah.
So that would just be a typical kind of door lock.
Obviously, this would not help work with a safe and stuff.
No.
Do you talk about how to break into safes?
No, I don't.
You don't.
That's another book, actually.
Right?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, I was just gonna say you should write one about casinos, how to rob casinos.
That's a good idea.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
I know,
and maybe. Do like instead of an Ocean 11, do Bayou 11 or 5, whatever. So you guys should go out and get the book, How to Steal the Mona Lisa, Taylor Bayou. Let's see, pick locks. Okay, we said that. Master the Art of Disguise. Wow. I mean, this is obviously sounds like the manual for spies. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you're like teaching us all these stealth ways of getting in and out.
Sure.
Wow. Now, getaway cars, let's talk about those for a second. Well, we want people to find out how to camouflage from the book, but so you're saying rather than change cars, you're just going to use the same car but change the way it appears?
Yeah, so that was specific to one of the heists in the book. Which is a pretty interesting concept of basically being able to change the color of a car from the inside of the car.
Oh, so, my gosh.
Yeah, so there's a way to do it. I'll let you read it, but there's basically a way to run a current through a specific type of polymer-based paint that will allow you to change the color of a car. You've probably seen them on the street and haven't even realized it.
Wow. Okay, that is so cool.
It is,
oh,
right?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So you can see how you need to learn a lot about technology and the latest things out there.
I want to have that on my day-to-day car, though, because sometimes I get tired of red.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people have it.
Maybe I want black.
Black.
Oh, my gosh. That's awesome.
Yeah. I know, like in an airbrush tan.
Yeah.
Right? Like what you can do, but you get it for the car. Very cool, man. Very cool stuff. How to Steal the Mona Lisa. So, okay, so we talk about the Mona Lisa. Which other one? Like, okay, so let's talk about the thinker. How, I mean, so where's that one? Where does that one reside now?
It's the museum in outside of France. Outside of Paris, sorry.
Outside of Paris. Mm-hmm. And
there's a courtyard in that particular museum where the thinker is. So you have access to it from the sky.
Yeah, so it's a courtyard that's open.
It's open.
Really?
Yeah.
Open air. Wow. And you can get to it from the sky.
Yeah.
Their first mistake.
Yep.
Yeah, right? Bringing a freaking helicopter, you got it, right? Well, I mean, wow. Yeah, you took on some definitely some great tasks here, you know? So you've got illustrations and explanations in the book as well. Who did the illustrations for you? Did you do them yourself?
No, I didn't. I actually hired someone here based in Los Angeles. Her name is Denise Au. She's a phenomenal artist. I wanted the artwork to be like line art.
Yeah.
So it was more instructional.
Yeah. It looks great. And you have like different icons here and stuff. The Hope Diamond. Yeah, so there's illustrations here of how to unscrew things with a drill, and wow.
It's intense.
Yeah.
Intricate.
He's talking about your new job at the Louvre. So, I mean, are you saying you should probably get a job there first? That would be easier, right?
Yeah, I mean, that particular heist requires you to do some long-term reconnaissance.
Yeah.
So it was important that for that particular heist that you actually, you know, bed down in Paris for a while.
Right, mm-hmm. Okay.
And that involved, you know, taking a job, a janitorial job at the Louvre, and learning a little bit about, you know, how the body scanners work when you come in and out of the museum.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's some things that are, you know, very predictable that I know aren't going to be changing in the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years. And there are other things that are. So I don't pretend to know exactly how it's going to play out. I mean, there are going to be, you know, areas where you're going to have to improvise.
Sure.
So in the case of the Louvre, I just felt there was a few things that were unsure or that would be unsure at any given time and that would require, you know, to take a job there and just learn a little bit about the nuances of body scanners.
Right.
If you survive being a janitor at the Louvre.
It actually sounds awesome to me.
Yeah, right? No, thank you. Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, you know, Kelsey's got it easy here. She doesn't want to be a janitor. But hey, if you stood to steal the Mona Lisa or something,
yeah,
you would do it. You know what I'm saying?
For the greater good.
Or for the name of Mother Russia or something. In the name of, you know, whatever. But, yeah, that's funny. So, I mean, wouldn't you say a lot of the skills here are skills that a spy would need to have, right?
Sure. I mean, I guess you can apply it to that.
Yeah. No, really.
Never thought about that.
Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because I've been reading about spies and stuff lately. So that's why I'm thinking it that way. But now, none of your methods involve, none of them involves hurting other people.
No violence.
No violence at all.
I think the idea here is that, you know, if you really plan in advance and if you're patient, if you have the bankroll to, you know, fund some of the, you know, the more expensive heists, you don't really need a weapon. You don't really need to hurt anyone. You don't need to slip a Daxin tablet into someone's coffee. You don't need to, you know, threaten a witness to keep quiet. You don't need to do this stuff. So I've designed all the heists to basically be as safe as possible.
Right.
Now, there's always the chance that, you know, someone else is going to open fire on you, like, you know, an authority of some sort. So
Security or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I can't and I won't pretend to say that these are, you know, there's no risk of
exactly. Being they're not risk free.
But you just, I mean, when is anyone risk free? You know, I mean, I'm on a fair dose of, you know, cough medication right now. So yeah. I drove here. So, you know, I put some people at risk including myself doing that.
Yeah,
so, probably. I mean, we make decisions all the time, it's, you know, and that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah.
What would the punishment be for one who steals the Mona Lisa? What is that even called?
It depends on what kind of deal you make.
I'm like, what would the justice system even call it, you know?
It's theft, no?
Yeah. Oh, God.
Wow. Yeah. Clever theft.
I know.
Right?
Strategic theft.
I mean, some people do 2 years, some people do 20 years, some people do life.
What? Yeah.
Wow.
It really depends on who you know and what information you can kind of barter with.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
So be the most informed.
Yeah, so I have that figured out ahead of time.
You can make a deal.
Yeah. I was thinking another great heist was the Thomas Crown Affair.
Yeah, that was a great one.
That movie, have you seen that?
I haven't.
You got to see it with Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so he's not James Bond in that one.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, but he's still got a good role there.
Nice.
And also, I mean, if you liked Ocean's 11, you're going to love this one.
Because
the ending is amazing, you know. It's just
amazing.
Yeah,
it's a good one. It's fun.
Yeah. So do you have any other heist movies that you like? I mean, that maybe influenced you.
I mean, the Italian Job, like you said earlier.
The Italian Job is
definitely
one of my favorites.
Right? Yeah.
But there were older ones, too. I can't remember which older ones there were of heists that were. There was one with Edward Norton and Robert De Niro. I think it's called Heist. I think that's what
really?
It's called.
Yeah,
or The Job. There's one that's called The Job, I think. I don't remember which one it was.
I keep getting asked about all the high – I need to just go and
– You really do.
Yeah, you really should.
Just go on Netflix or something.
Because naturally somebody would think that you're like – you know, an authority on all heists.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. And it totally connects to movies because that's all we know is the stuff we see in movies about heists.
It's
true.
Because
it's something that's not public. I mean, you know, it's something that happens, mm-hmm. you know, in secret.
Sure.
So, but, you know, so you said a lot of people don't do it because of fear. But what about criminals that are not afraid? They surely would have thought about some of the ways you figured out, right? Or now they will by buying your book.
Well, you know, and they already have. I mean, I've borrowed from, you know, some of the heists. For instance, the Mona Lisa heist, I borrowed from that one.
Right.
You know, I think what happens most of the time, and I should just say right now, their artwork is stolen all the time.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you might not hear about it because it's just not popular enough. You know?
Right.
Of course, if something like the Mona Lisa were to get stolen, we'd all hear about that, right?
Right.
But the thing is, it's kind of silly to steal the Mona Lisa because it doesn't really – there's other paintings with the same value that are, you know, that have less – that are less iconic.
Oh, wow. Sure. That's
yeah.
true.
Yeah. Of
that's
course, true. It's a lot less interesting. And, you know, if you're – you know, if you really want to do something exciting, then
right.
that's a great one to steal. But yeah. if you're just in it to try to flip it and get cash
– Exactly. For the money, go for something that's less
right.
obvious.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Wow. True. All right, everybody. Well, we're totally out of time. We are talking to Taylor let's say it again. Taylor Bayuth, and the book is How to Steal the Mona Lisa and Six Other World Famous Treasures. Taylor, how can people get a hold of you? How can they find more about you and the book?
You can find out about me and the book online. We've got a Facebook page, so you can go on Facebook and look for How to Steal the Mona Lisa. You can find the book anywhere, really, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, Amazon.
Great, great. So you must be excited about this. Are you going to do any book signings at all?
I'm not, but
no,
I've been signing books randomly. So
really?
Doing inline signings, but yeah, I don't have a...
Very cool. Well, everybody, go to Amazon, please. Search for How to Steal the Mona Lisa, and let's give Taylor a good review because I'm fascinated. Please have the publicist or whoever send me a copy, okay, because I would love to read this.
Sure.
It's fascinating to us. It's like a video game. And it's awesome. So maybe we'll see you make video games in the future as well, huh?
That'd be cool.
Who knows? Yeah. But do come back and let us know how things are going. I mean,
great.
You're off.
Love to come back.
You're very talented, very interesting, and you're able to tackle something that you didn't know anything about before. And I think that's cool. You know.
Thank you so much for
so
having me.
So thank you very much, Taylor. Kelsey, thank you as always. Go get some sleep.
Okay? I will.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.